Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone along with Leslie Gold. There are many ways to get around a city like New York. Subway, bus, taxi, walk. But there is only one way to see New York in a very specific way. There's an experience called The Ride. It's a part tour, it's a part show, and it's called a total entertainment by the people involved with The Ride. Richard Humphrey is CEO and CCO of The Ride. He has a very extensive background in the arts as a producer of many different things, Broadway and events of all kinds. I asked Richard, first of all, to describe what The Ride experience is like.
Well, The Ride has become an outsized Times Square juggernaut of an attraction. And I use such hyperbole because it's critically and virally acclaimed. We basically are the only traveling theaters in the world. There are four motor coaches with patented technology and also patented design, where when you enter the motor coach, you're entering a wall of glass with Colosseum seating facing the street, making the street the stage. So as the attraction currently is formulated, we have a 4.2-mile journey launching from the heart of Times Square throughout Midtown to various locations with 40 interactive screens, two improvisational hosts, all the technology needed to run a Broadway show, and with some pop-up performances along the way. So we like to refer to The Ride as part tour, part show, pure entertainment.
It's such a unique and interesting concept. How did this idea begin?
Well, I wish I could take credit for all the genius, but the original idea was come up by a great guy and by the name of Michael Counts. And Michael actually had the idea of a vehicle that would have this type of configuration. And when I came to the business, it had a great idea, but no scalable business plan. The business didn't make sense because since the organization has four $1.5 million vehicles and only 49 seats per performance, and a cast of thousands, well, that's a little bit of hyperbole, but you get the picture, because we have performers, technology people, we have marketing and sales and corporate. So we don't have 1,200 seats like a Broadway show. So they couldn't make the business plan work. And as you said earlier, I do have a history more as an entrepreneur in the arts. The last 15 years, I've been sitting at the intersection between content and emerging digital distribution strategies. And that was how the venture capitalist, Jeffrey McCormick, who founded Saturn Asset Management out of Boston, they had considerable money in the original management. And they asked me to see if I could make magic with this and revamp the business plan. So when I came in late in 2011, that was my mandate, to see if I could make this a truly scalable business. And what attracted me to it is the fact that it is indeed a global business plan.
So you're going to branch out?
Yes. Yes. Our goal, you know, at the moment, now that the company's restructured and we can see the trajectory to keep us cash flow positive, then we're looking at other cities, both nationally and internationally. Because, you know, I think that the brilliance of the creative plan is looking at cities as theme parks themselves. And as you know very well, Valerie, because you're so deeply immersed in the culture of Broadway and entertainment as well, the experiential is what people want today. And we are definitely an experiential experience attraction slash show.
Tell me a little bit more about the business model of The Ride, Richard.
As our business plan scales and as our brand accelerates, we have the patent on these. So we have, interestingly, I got us two very interesting patents. One is a patent for this design, so no one can build a vehicle with this configuration of seating without our permission or paying us a royalty. So that's method of entertainment. And we also have, believe it or not, mode of entertainment, where a vehicle moving and the streets the stage. So those are two very compelling patents that have potential revenue streams for us. We run the number of rides as all attractions were seasonal. So during Christmas month, for instance, we're sold out. We're doing 74 performances a week. That's a delicious ka-ching. But then, you know, January 5th comes along and you fall off the edge of the cliff and everybody's holed up in their homes and broke and worn out from the holidays. And then our performance schedule can drop back to as small as 20 a week. So you have to look at the seasonality as all attractions and indeed Broadway. I mean, you know, Broadway does 2-for-1 in January. So we're victimized by that. But we also have developed other very compelling revenue streams because of what we can do with these vehicles. One I call out of home, which is our ability to use this model of performance, for instance, for product launches or to announce openings with performers dressed appropriately on the street with videos that have to do with the product. And then we also have a corporate line of people doing incentive trips for employees. You know, we've done things like Diesel, where I've dressed the performers in wardrobe from Diesel or Estee Lauder or Pepsi. So those are very lucrative for us, and they're very much fun for us to do using our entertainment model. The first year I was here, I needed to get the ride's momentum back since they had been unsuccessful in the launch. So I launched a ride called the Fazino Ride to get the press's attention back based on the work of Charles Fazino, who's an internationally renowned 3D pop artist who your audience would know as the official artist of the Olympics, of the NFL, of the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And we had tremendous response on that. He designed the wrap on the vehicle, and indeed we got a Drama Desk nomination for that as most unique theatrical production. So that was actually one of the thrilling moments of my career to even get the call.
So Richard Humphrey, CEO of The Ride, I'm envisioning this mammoth vehicle in the middle of Times Square, one of the most crowded places on Earth, at rush hour. How do you navigate this? You're going to be stuck in traffic a lot of the time, right?
Oh, yes. But that's the beauty of the design of the show. Yeah, I mean, you know, President Obama's in town. There's an act of suspected terrorism, you know, weather, innumerable issues. But we have two trained improvisational hosts, and they are so talented. We have many sets of them. Whatever's happening on the street, they can make entertainment from. So that part of the show is constantly changing, and as many times as I go on to give notes or to put in new acts, I am never bored by the talent of these young hosts and their ability to create humor from the streets and the pulsing energy of New York City. But in addition to that, we have a lot of what I call on the software, a lot of hip pocket resolutions. We have game quizzes. We have historical footage that we don't use in every ride. But if, say, we get stuck on 6th Avenue, I have very detailed video that I can bring up with history about, say, Radio City Music Hall. We do simulations with the unbelievable technology of these vehicles. We do a subway simulation that if you close your eyes, you're absolutely going to think you're on a subway. So these are things outside of the normal trajectory of the 75-minute performance piece as we drive through town that we can call up so that people are never restless or bored.
And so you are expanding into other cities. Can you talk about some of these areas yet?
Yes. I mean, nothing's firm, and, you know, we like to speculate, as we do in all of our entertainment projects. But we have had significant conversations with cities that I think, Valerie, will appear obvious to you. There's very much interest in San Francisco for this. Las Vegas, which I can't wait to build a show for Las Vegas, because in Las Vegas, they don't allow performers on the street because it's basically a linear thoroughfare and you know what the mobs are like there. So we'll be able to pull into these grand concourses and do a lot of technological exciting moments outside of individual performers. So I'm excited about that. We've looked at Boston because we have a potential strategic partner there, and most significantly London, where we've had a lot of outreach from London. The other city where we have a significant travel partner to work with is Tokyo, because believe it or not, the Japanese audience some months amounts to as large as 11% of our ticket sales. The Japanese population loved the ride, and we actually now have the ride available for Japanese, Portuguese, Spanish, and French.
That's CEO, CCO of The Ride, Richard Humphrey. The Ride is considered to be part tour, part show, and total entertainment. You can go to experiencetheride.com for more information. I'm Valerie Smaldone along with Leslie Gold on this edition of America Weekend. Great to have you with us. Stick around, much more coming up on the Envision Radio Network.
Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Would you like to know where love comes from? Actually, it's a chemical thing. In fact, when you're in love, you're just a slave of brain chemistry. Here's the science of it. When you see someone you love, the front part of your brain injects a dose of endogenous morphine, the same neuropeptide chemical a runner gets. Now you feel great all over and even your digestion improves. Next, your midbrain triggers the mesolimbic pathway and the reward transmitter, dopamine. Now this chemical's like a drill sergeant, and before you know it, you're expressing your undying love to anyone who's standing close.
Wow, crazy.
What's the cheap psychological trick? Well, love is a chemical thing. Enjoy it while it lasts. It's an everyday Valentine gift from your brain to you. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Lovers, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Diane had just paid her fare on a city bus and was beginning to sit down when it pulled away from the curb. She fell and hurt her back, so she sued the city for her pain and injuries. But in court, the city proved that the bus was operating in a safe manner because the driver did not swerve dangerously away from the curb. Who do you think won this case? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappyLandAudio.com. That's HappyLandAudio.com.
Although it was proven that the driver didn't swerve dangerously, it is still the driver's duty to wait until Diane had a chance to sit down before moving the bus. Diane won, and that's the final verdict.